Chapter 28. There was a pause. Then he spoke again, in a far less elaborate manner. Your husband has not gone out to wait for me in the street by chance?
In the street? Repeated Mrs. Verloc, surprised.
He couldn't. There's no other door to the house. For a moment she sat impassive, then left her seat to go and peep through the glazed door. Suddenly she opened it, and disappeared into the parlor. Mr. Verloc had done no more than put on his overcoat. But why he should remain afterwards leaning over the table propped up on his two arms, as though he were feeling giddy or sick, she could not understand.
Dolph, she called out half aloud, and when he had raised himself.
Do you know that man? She asked rapidly.
I've heard of him, whispered uneasily Mr. Verloc, darting a wild glance at the door.
Mrs. Verloc's fine, incurious eyes lighted up with a flash of abhorrence.
One of Carl Jung's friends, beastly old man.
No, no, protested Mr. Verloc, busy fishing for his hat. But when he got it from under the sofa he held it, as if he did not know the use of a hat.
Well, he's waiting for you, said Mrs. Verloc at last.
Say, Adolph, he ain't one of them embassy people you have been bothered with of late?
Bothered with embassy people, repeated Mr. Verloc, with a heavy start of surprise and fear.
Who's been talking to you of the embassy people?
Yourself.
I talked of the embassy to you.
Mr. Verloc seemed scared and bewildered beyond measure. His wife explained.
You've been talking a little in your sleep of late, Adolph.
What did I say? What do you know?
Nothing much. It seemed mostly nonsense.
Enough to let me guess that something worried you.
Mr. Verloc rammed his hat on his head. A crimson flood of anger ran over his face.
Nonsense, eh? The embassy people. I would cut their hearts out one after another. But let them look out. I've got a tongue in my head.
He fumed, pacing up and down between the table and the sofa, his open overcoat catching against the angles.
The red flood of anger ebbed out, and left his face all white, with quivering nostrils.
Mrs. Verloc, for the purposes of practical existence, put down these appearances to the cold.
Well, she said, get rid of the man, whoever he is, as soon as you can, and come back home to me.
You want looking after for a day or two.
Mr. Verloc calmed down, and, with resolution imprinted on his pale face, had already opened the door when his wife called him back in a whisper.
Adolph! Adolph!
He came back startled.
Had about that money you drew out? She asked.
Who have got it in your pocket?
Hadn't you better? Mr. Verloc gazed stupidly into the palm of his wife's extended hand for some time, before he slapped his brow.
Money. Yes. Yes. I didn't know what you meant.
He drew out of his breast pocket a new pigskin pocketbook.
Mrs. Verloc received it without another word, and stood still till the bell, clattering after Mr. Verloc and Mr. Verloc's visitor, had quieted down.
Only then she peeped in at the amount, drawing the notes out for the purpose.
After this inspection she looked round thoughtfully, with an air of mistrust in the silence and solitude of the house. This abode of her married life appeared to her as lonely and unsafe as though it had been situated in the midst of a forest.
No receptacle she could think of amongst the solid, heavy furniture seemed other, but flimsy and particularly tempting to her conception of a housebreaker.
It was an ideal conception, endowed with sublime faculties and a miraculous insight.
The till was not to be thought of, it was the first spot a thief would make for.
Mrs. Verloc, unfastening hastily a couple of hooks, slipped the pocketbook under the bodice of her dress.
Having thus disposed of her husband's capital, she was rather glad to hear the clatter of the doorbell, announcing an arrival.
Assuming the fixed, unabashed stare and the stony expression reserved for the casual customer, she walked in behind the counter.
A man standing in the middle of the shop was inspecting it with a swift, cool, all-round glance.
His eyes ran over the walls, took in the ceiling, noted the floor all in a moment. The points of a long, fair mustache fell below the line of the jaw. He smiled the smile of an old, if distant acquaintance, and Mrs. Verloc remembered having seen him before. Not a customer. She softened her customer stare to mere indifference, and faced him across the counter. He approached, on his side, confidentially, but not too markedly so. "Husband at home, Mrs. Verloc?" he asked in an easy, full tone. "No. He's gone out. I am sorry for that. I've called to get from him a little private information." This was the exact truth. Chief Inspector Heat had been all the way home, and had even gone so far as to think of getting into his slippers, since practically he was, he told himself, chucked out of that case. He indulged in some scornful and in a few angry thoughts, and found the occupation so unsatisfactory that he resolved to seek relief out of doors. Nothing prevented him paying a friendly call to Mr. Verloc, casually as it were. It was in the character of a private citizen that walking out privately he made use of his customary conveyances. Their general direction was towards Mr. Verloc's home. Chief Inspector Heat respected his own private character so consistently that he took especial pains to avoid all the police constables on point and patrol duty in the vicinity of Brett Street. This precaution was much more necessary for a man of his standing than for an obscure assistant commissioner. Private citizen Heat entered the street, maneuvering in a way which in a member of the criminal classes would have been stigmatized as slinking. The piece of cloth picked up in Greenwich was in his pocket. Not that he had the slightest intention of producing it in his private capacity. On the contrary, he wanted to know just what Mr. Verloc would be disposed to say voluntarily. He hoped Mr. Verloc's talk would be of a nature to incriminate Michaelis. It was a conscientiously professional hope in the main, but not without its moral value. For Chief Inspector Heat was a servant of justice. Find Mr. Verloc from home, he felt disappointed. "I would wait for him a little, if I were sure he wouldn't be long," he said. Mrs. Verloc volunteered no assurance of any kind. "The information I need is quite private," he repeated. "You understand what I mean? I wonder if you could give me a notion where he's gone to?" Mrs. Verloc shook her head. "Can't say." She turned away to arrange some boxes on the shelves behind the counter. Chief Inspector Heat looked at her thoughtfully for a time. "I suppose you know who I am?" he said. Mrs. Verloc glanced over her shoulder. Chief Inspector Heat was amazed at her coolness. "Come. You know I am in the police," he said sharply. "I don't trouble my head much about it," Mrs. Verloc remarked, returning to the arranging of her boxes. "My name is Heat. Chief Inspector Heat of the Special Crimes Section." Mrs. Verloc adjusted nicely in its place a small cardboard box, and turning round, faced him again, heavy-eyed, with idle hands hanging down. A silence reigned for a time. "So your husband went out a quarter of an hour ago. And he didn't say when he would be back?" "He didn't go out alone," Mrs. Verloc let fall negligently. "A friend?" Mrs. Verloc touched the back of her hair. It was in perfect order. "A stranger who called." "I see. What sort of man was that stranger? Would you mind telling me?" Mrs. Verloc did not mind. And when Chief Inspector Heat heard of a man dark, thin, with a long face and turned up mustaches, he gave signs of perturbation, and exclaimed, "Dash me if I didn't think so. He hasn't lost any time." He was intensely disgusted in the secrecy of his heart at the unofficial conduct of his immediate chief. But he was not quixotic. He lost all desire to await Mr. Verloc's return. What they had gone out for he did not know, but he imagined it possible that they would return together. "The case is not followed properly, it's being tampered with," he thought bitterly. "I am afraid I haven't time to wait for your husband," he said. Mrs. Verloc received this declaration listlessly. Her detachment had impressed Chief Inspector Heat all along. At this precise moment it whetted his curiosity. Chief Inspector Heat hung in the wind, swayed by his passions like the most private of citizens. "I think," he said, looking at her steadily, "that you could give me a pretty good notion of what's going on if you liked." Forcing her fine, inner eyes to return his gaze, Mrs. Verloc murmured. "Going on? What is going on?" "Why, the affair I came to talk about a little with your husband." That day Mrs. Verloc had glanced at a morning paper as usual. But as he had not stirred out of doors, the newsboys never invaded Brett Street. It was not a street for their business. And the echo of their cries drifting along the populous thoroughfares expired between the dirty brick walls without reaching the threshold of the shop. Her husband had not brought an evening paper home. At any rate, as he had not seen it. Mrs. Verloc knew nothing whatever of any affair. And she said so, with a genuine note of wonder in her quiet voice. Chief Inspector Heat did not believe for a moment in so much ignorance. Curtly, without amiability, he stated the bare fact. Mrs. Verloc turned away her eyes. "I call it silly," she pronounced slowly. She paused. "He ain't downtrodden slaves here." The chief inspector waited watchfully. Nothing more came. "And your husband didn't mention anything to you when he came home?" Mrs. Verloc simply turned her face from right to left in sign of negation. A languid, baffling silence reigned in the shop. Chief Inspector Heat felt provoked beyond endurance. "There was another small matter," he began in a detached tone, "which I wanted to speak to your husband about. There came into our hands what we believe is a stolen overcoat." Mrs. Verloc, with her mind specially aware of thieves that evening, touched lightly the bosom of her dress. "We have lost no overcoat," she said calmly. "That's funny," continued Private Citizen Heat. "See, you keep a lot of marking ink here." He took up a small bottle and looked at it against the gas jet in the middle of the shop. "Purple, isn't it?" he remarked, setting it down again. "As I said, it's strange. Because the overcoat has got a label sewn on the inside with your address written in marking ink." Mrs. Verloc leaned over the counter with a low exclamation. "That's my brother's, then." "Where's your brother? Can I see him?" asked the chief inspector briskly. Mrs. Verloc leaned a little more over the counter. "No. He isn't here. I wrote that label myself." "Where's your brother now?" "He's been away living with a friend in the country. The overcoat comes from the country. And what's the name of the friend?" "Michaelis," confessed Mrs. Verloc in an odd whisper. The chief inspector let out a whistle. His eyes snapped. "Just so. Capital. And your brother now, what's he like, a sturdy, darkish chap, eh?" "Oh no," exclaimed Mrs. Verloc fervently. "Hat must be the thief. Stevie's slight and fair." "Good," said the chief inspector in an approving tone. And while Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.